Welcome to Deep Dive Genre. Benjamin Wundz is a producer, writer, director, and pop culture enthusiast. His specialty are genre-focused films and TV series. For the last 12 years, he worked for Constantine Film and their subsidiary Rat Pack Film, where he worked on projects such as Stung, Polar, the worldwide number one Netflix movie Blood Red Sky, and Old People, among others. In 2022, Benjamin joined Wiedemann & Berg as a producer on staff and rebooted the cult classic TV show X-Factor, Das Unfassbare, starring Jonathan Frakes, which was shot and produced in Los Angeles. We talked to Benjamin via video call for this interview. Hi, Benjamin.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for sitting down with us today. The focus of our third podcast season is horror, a genre that is quite rare in Germany. And nothing has done a better job in recent years to bring that genre back into the mainstream spotlight here in Germany than that film you produced, Blood Red Sky, which was viewed 60 million times worldwide and number one in 57 countries in the Netflix streaming charts. So congratulations.
And thank you.
Blood Red Sky came out 2 years ago. Another film you produced, Old People, was released last year. So I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us and give us some insight about the process behind these two projects.
No worries. Very much looking forward.
Given what a notorious tricky genre to produce or to make horror is in Germany and how hard it was to get Blood Red Sky off the ground, but more on that later, did you ever think about possibly taking the project outside of Germany?
On Blood Red Sky, as we will talk about this later too, it has been a 15-year journey to get that movie made. And it needed, at least I would say, two big industry revolutions to at least get to the point where we could do a movie like that in Germany. Mm-hmm. Over the course of those 15 years, we actually more than once went into the independent international sales realm and try to make this movie as an international feature film.
Yeah.
Mostly because we started as a German movie and it was always designed to be a German film with German actors in it. Obviously, there is a strong English language component to it, which was in there from the beginning. And we always thought, and Peter always thought it could be cool to get some cameos in there and some international stars. But on the way, and at that point, and we were, like I said, we're talking like 12 to 13 years ago, the movie even got funding. The movie at one point had Moritz Bleibtreu, Matthias Schweighöfer, and like big German stars even attached. And Alexandra Maria Lara at that point was considered playing the lead. They even got funding from Cologne, from the Nordrhein-Westfalia Film Institution. And at that point, it looked really, really well to do it. But still, it was always missing at least like half the budget from outside of Germany. As obviously at that point, doing a big horror genre movie that would also be very, it's not a cheap movie to do, doing genre and horror. At that point, I wasn't involved, but they were biting their teeth over this and couldn't get the project off the ground. So at that point, I like now it's 10 years ago, I joined the project with Rat Pack, which was the company, and Christian Becker, who is the lead producer on Blood Red Sky and everything Rat Pack does. We thought, okay, let's take this international, let's do it fully English, so we can run this by the sales festivals of this world and the markets of this world to see if we can get it off the ground. At that point, I can't even remember how many times we flew to Cannes, how many times we attended the American film market, talking to different sales agencies. At that point, like, I think we had four sales agents over the course of the years involved in this, trying to get cast at one point. So it's funny when I tell the story, it's the story of how many times we opened up a bottle of champagne when we thought the project would be done. And we opened a lot of bottles of champagne on this movie, especially at one point Universal became involved. And that's an important part of the whole story of Blood Red Sky. And it has been already told by Peter many, many times. So I tried to make it short.
I haven't talked to Peter yet. That's still coming. So,
So he will tell the same story. So I will try to get another perspective on that. But Universal got involved. They wanted to pay the half of the budget. The rest would still come from Germany. But at that point was like, okay, we give you it was 3 to 4 million and we can give you that. But you need to find cast that it's worth it. And at that point we thought, yeah, okay, we have Universal involved, so that will be easy. Turns out it's not easy. And we, in that point, we talked about, like, for example, for the lead of Olga Korolenko playing, could play the lead or someone in that realm. And we made offers to Mila Kunis and so on. And it was kind of funny and never really came to fruition in a way. And that was really, it took us a long, long years where we spent in casting hell trying to get it off the ground. We even, like, there's a one funny story, and I hope Peter is going to tell it, where we chased Arnold Schwarzenegger down an airplane where he was in first class, and we were sitting in economy in an airplane from Munich to LA trying to get him to read Blood Red Sky on the flight. And we knew he was there, and he knew we were there, but a first class purser stood in the way and didn't let us through to him. And then there's the funny story when we went to the film festival in Oldenburg, where Nicolas Cage was about to receive his Lifetime Achievement Award, which is a whole funny story in itself. But we had literally a $1 million offer in our bag and the script to go to Nicolas Cage and ask him if he wants to play the role of Berg, which is like the leader of the,
Yeah, so
let's
what
call it the terrorists.
Dominic Purcell's role
It
basically.
ended up to be Dominic Purcell. And we offered him like $1 million for 5 days to come in and shoot this. And that also didn't work out. This is like one of the longest and most funny stories. It's a movie in itself, how we tried to make the movie international. So that's a long answer to a quick question. Did we try? Oh, yeah, we tried. On how we tried, I can't even put more emphasis on this.
Oh my God. Well, my next question then, you sort of debunked that, but I'm still going to ask it because my idea of some horror films, obviously not all of them, is that you can achieve quite an interesting profit margin with them because a lot of them, the ones that I've seen, are proper chamber plays. So I would think that these can be produced with a reasonable budget as long as not a lot of action is involved. And I know this is a loaded question, which probably warrants its own podcast episode. But why do you think it's often an afterthought to the public broadcasters and France and in Germany to do anything horror, no matter which size of the production?
This is also a question that has many, many sides to it. Yes, horror has a stronger upside because the budget margins are normally lower than other films. On the other side, there is a huge indie market internationally that does horror films on a low budget that don't make any profit. It's just the big studio horror movies from Blumhouse and from Atomic Monster and James Wan that we all recognize that end up in cinemas around the world that make these huge margins, but they are treated as studio movies. So they get the same treatment as a $200 million Avengers movie, marketing wise and everything. And so, yeah, they have huge margins on those. And it's like something we internationals always look at and think, oh my God, that could be a market that could work. While actually, it's only studio horror movies that get it. And from time to time, there is an indie movie that does that, yes. But there's also a drama art house movie from time to time that does that if you look at the Oscar movies. So, but yes, that works. And the reason it hasn't been done a lot in Germany is a total different answer to the whole question because Germany has a focus on movies that need to get funded by a state fund. You don't get a
But
state fund, you don't get a movie made. The state funds are literally run by TV stations. Each TV station in each state has the control over their funds. It's juries from the TV stations that sit mostly in the committees of the state funds. So having said that, horror doesn't take place very much on TV. It's like a late night thing. You bring out movies that are PG-13 are being shown in the middle of the night, and they don't make big numbers on TV. So the TV programs weren't really into doing horror. They would rather do things they could program in prime time and have like big numbers on that, or movies that could go to Berlinale, Cannes, and so on to make like prizes and awards, which would then help them put their state fund more on the map of being a cool state fund that helps like movies that win awards. So they weren't really into doing horror, A, because of the facts that I said, plus this fundings always saw themselves more as an art fund, not as much as an industry fund at that point, especially in the last 15 years. So they wanted to support more art house movies, and horror and genre especially was always seen as more pop cultural than it was seen as an art form, which I think always has been wrong and was a wrong approach. But it also comes from the fact that most of the horror movies came from the US, and also they always had especially coming out of the 80s, the taste of being something dirty in a way, as they were like in the videotape stores or whatever. They were in like the restricted areas with the porn movies and so on. So it always had like a weird feeling to the people, especially not coming out of film, but let's say coming more out of a cultural background, which still are people at work at the funds. They mostly are not filmmakers, but these are people that come from studies that mostly focus on art and culture or theater. And so they were mostly focused on saying, okay, we want stuff that really matters. And saying horror doesn't matter was an easy case for them at that point, because horror was seen as something else in Germany. And wasn't, perhaps they even saw it as an industry product, but they didn't see it as an art form. And obviously, me being a supporter of the genres is someone saying, no, that's not true. Like, you know, even Dawn of the Dead has a very strong component, and horror is something that at least can resonate with a bigger audience, which arthouse, to be honest, can't, because arthouse limits itself to an arthouse audience. But horror always had the chance of not only resonating with horror fans, but also resonating with mainstream audience. So it's actually easier to get your message, and the message of horror movies always have been very, very strong and important messages, also due to the zeitgeist to go out and have that audience. So I think it was a mistake, but like I said, there was no interest in doing horror as the TV stations. What should they do with a horror movie, even if it is big? Then it ends up in SVR at like, I don't know, 11 in the middle of the night.
Probably more like 2 o'clock in the morning, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, which is really odd, because if you look at something like, you know, Hallstätten, which yes, it was independently produced, but I mean, that was, what was that, 2018, I think. And it was the most successful film outside of Germany in that year from, you know, all the Comcast statistics that we got, which was really odd. That and children's films.
I can tell you something very funny about international numbers of German movies. And this is a true story. So my horror movie Stung, that I produced in 2013, was sold into 15 countries around the world, pre-sold, before we even made the movie, from XYZ, which is a strong sales agent at the time. We collected $1 million for that movie from international sales, even before the movie got made. Just a number, 1 million against like the world that we sold the movie to. Fuck You, Goethe, which is the most successful German movie of all time, which made 7 million admissions in Germany and made 60 million euros in Germany alone. That movie sold into the world, and it made its total, and that's like one of the highest numbers that ever have been sold for a German movie to the world, was 500,000 euros. So the horror movie we sold that no one ever saw in the cinemas, no one till today doesn't really know about, we made 1 million against the world with just a horror movie and a teaser and two unknown American actors, against 500,000 for the biggest movie of all time that has been like made in Germany. So for Hallstätten going around the world, it's easy to sell a horror movie to the world, making, let's say, for the year 300,000 to 500,000 and being like the top seller in this year. Compared to like a German comedy event, even Fuck You Goethe only makes like 500,000.
Yeah. Oh, man. Now we're getting a little bit more specific. What grabbed you about the story in Blood Red Sky and, in addition, Old People?
That's a really good question. Blood Red Sky was really fun because obviously the script has been around for a long time. And the script, I must say, was one of the best scripts I have ever read. Mm-hmm. Like, you read that script and it was a page turner. It was an amazing script. But I still think what Stefan and Peter, the writers, and Peter's also being the director, obviously, but what they two managed of doing is like catching that zeitgeist of even before it. Like, we're talking 10 years before COVID about conspiracies, about, you know, what makes an evil guy, what's not. And you have like a female lead character that is struggling with her family and with her life over a life-threatening situation of some terrorist hijacking a plane. And so there is so many different dramatic angles to that script that all come together and lead you through it. And then there's obviously the very strong emotional component to it. Mm-hmm. And I really loved it. And even like the roller coaster ride it provides, it's something that Peter always does in his movies. And I told him that and he doesn't believe it. But I analyzed, even with like students, I analyzed some of his movies. It's always a story about people coming together that don't want to change in their life. Like, it's the same thing on Bang Boom Bang, if you remember. It's like two slackers who don't want to change their lives. And then a downward spiral of violence happens to them and questions their decision. And in the end, they remain the people that they have been. Just like having, so the answer in the end is always, no, no, we were good guys from the beginning.
Yeah.
And even a lot of stuff happened that we didn't change. We were still like slackers in the end. It's very much the same thing on Blood Red Sky. It's very funny because I think the structure of Blood Red Sky is kind of the same than in Bang Boom Bang and probably all of Peter's movies, but he says, no, 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 it's not. So that's kind of funny. But for example, the two main characters to me in Blood Red Sky is not Nadia. Nadia is like the antagonistic force in the whole process of the movie. But to me, the two leads is actually Elias, who's the kid, and is Fahid, who is the Arabic scientist who's on board too. Because those two guys have golden hearts in the beginning. They're two good guys. They don't want to change. They only want to help people. Mm-hmm. And it's made very clear in the beginning of the movie. And then they are the only two guys that actually survive in the end, which makes them actually the heroes who have survived everything. And then they hug it out and help each other again. So they are, again, in the end, two guys with golden hearts that whatever happened to them, even one of them losing their mother. Now I'm spoiling Blood Red Sky, but I think all of the people should have seen it and listened to the podcast.
I think so, too.
So, but like they are still the same kind of guy. So it's very funny. And Peter is very much, if you talk to him about like what interests him, it's he always talks about dynamics. He talks about dynamics in his group of friends. He talks about dynamics in politics. He talks about dynamics even in like his favorite soccer club. And that's something you get when you watch Blood Red Sky. It's a movie about dynamics that like it starts small, but then the downward spiral gets so much more dynamic. Even like the passengers on board of that plane have their own dynamic with each other. If a dynamic then hits another dynamic, that's like a point where total drama happens and total chaos. And that's something I really love about Blood Red Sky, apart from the cool fact that we try to make a movie that is super modern, super diverse, super cool, super stylish, and also has a very, very strong message to the world. And that's something I think is pretty cool. And also that it is so unique in its style and feeling. Like, I don't know a lot of movies that feel like Blood Red Sky. And I also think this is a big point why it became such a weird, huge success in a way, that people got something that the taste they never really have tasted. It's not a normal standard Conjuring kind of Blumhouse horror movie. It's very different from that.
Now we're circling back. It took 15, 16 years and you guys made a very elaborate proof of concept trailer at some point as well, which, you know, all of that now seems unbelievable. And I wonder, did you and Peter ever discuss maybe changing some parameters, like make it a series, make it an event series? In short, how did you guys stay true to the story?
Yeah, at that time, there wasn't much talk about doing series. That came a little bit later. So it was always supposed to be a movie and we always wanted to make it as a movie. And yes, there have been obviously talking to those sales agents I was talking about earlier. Obviously, there was an idea that Nicolas Cage should be like the lead hero who saves them in the end and then comes in charging in and saving them. And or, you know, the role that Graham McTavish plays, you know, that he should come on board and save them. And there was like a lot of these, like we always said, there was a lot of plastic movie talk, like the movie, how it should be when it's a DVD movie. But Peter always said, no, no, that's not the movie I want to make. Obviously, he was ready to do some compromise. So there is a version that doesn't have the flashbacks. There is a version that doesn't have that huge start and ending like on the airfield.
Yeah.
And there are different versions, even to the scripts. I think there have been like 16 or 17 script versions of that movie.
Yeah.
The good thing is, and this is like one of the nice or cool things in the story of Blood Red Sky, that in the end, when Netflix stepped in, David Cossey, who was the lead of the international unit at Netflix at that point, said, guys, I want you to make the movie how Peter always envisioned it. So having a German actress and having the story how it was originally intended, not doing any compromise to it. And that was obviously the best thing that could happen to Peter in the movie at that point.
Wonderful. Now we're going very small for a second, because I think it's always interesting to get to the essence of a film if you try and describe them in three words. So I'm asking you to do that for Blood Red Sky and for Old People, if you can. Or maybe just one word.
One word. Okay. Oh, no, that's probably too hard. Old People, we haven't talked about Old People yet, but Old People is a bit easier in its pitch because the idea behind Old People was always, okay, our society is based on success.
Yeah.
And we always thought that comes with a lot of compromise. That means that we are sending our kids in the first half year they are born already to like a kindergarten. We send our old people to nursery homes and old people homes as soon as possible so they can get out of the way, so we can live in our success society and just keep on working and doing the things that we think are important. And on old people, it was always, okay, what would happen if like the old people in the world overnight get a collective kind of conscience and without even having spoken a word to each other, decide that this has to stop, that they are the only ones, because the young ones are not strong enough and don't have the experience, but the old people overnight say, okay, it's enough. We have to end this society how it is. Otherwise, the world will end. And I love that pitch. I still think it's an amazing pitch, and it wasn't used enough for the movie in the end when it came out to Netflix. But like, I think it's a wonderful pitch on what if. And I think both movies have very, very strong what ifs. What if the old people one day would stay up and just kill everybody?
Yeah.
So the young people can have a new world and the world we all should have. And the same thing goes for Blood Red Sky. Is it like, okay, what if you wake up in the middle of the night and your plane gets hijacked and you don't want it to be turned around because you're the last vampire on Earth?
Yeah.
And that's a very funny, because it's so hard to actually get into that. So normally movies have to be like, okay, I can resonate with the main character. It's a normal guy and then something supernatural happens. But on Blood Red Sky, it's very funny because the main character, if it is Nadja, like there has been dispute about who's the main character in Blood Red Sky.
Well,
obviously,
I think
like
it's Elias as well. So
Elias is a very normal guy. It's a very normal kid. And even Fahid is very normal. And something supernatural happens to them. So what happened? But also the question for Fahid and Elias is, okay, what if, you know, your mother turns evil and you have to kind of stop her and some evil terrorists that are with you on that plane? And so and it's like the whole concept of Blood Red Sky is a huge what if move. What if your plane gets hijacked? What if you are a vampire? What if you are a mother and you need to protect your child? What if you are a kid and you need to kill your mom to save the world? What if you are an Arab guy who everyone thinks is a terrorist, but actually you're the only hero on board that can save everyone? So it's a lot of what ifs in Blood Red Sky. Never thought about it like that, but like I said, I love what ifs, and I think that what ifs are, especially if it comes to genre, something that drive you to see these kind of movies and that you want to see. What if, you know, there is a monster under your bed, and then you watch the movie where you see the monster under the bed. And it's a little bit escapism too, I think.
Absolutely. As a producer, how hands-on are you in regards to the script? You know, obviously with Blood Red Sky, you spent almost 10 years with the project. You said there were like 16-ish versions of the script. I don't know if it was probably not anything at all in that ballpark with old people. How involved are you in the script stages?
The thing is, Blood Red Sky, I got the script that was already written like 8 to now 10 years ago. So, and Peter is a fantastic writer and Stefan too. So the script, like I said, was a fantastic script. Obviously, we talked in the process of making the movie. We talked a lot about the script and its beats and what it is. And I tried to be very analytic with these things. And I was kind of very heavily involved. But then on the other side, there was already a script. So I was not involved in development of the script. But like I said, Peter just writes these scripts, sends them to you and asks you, what do you think? He's very collaborative, so the great thing is you can always weigh in, and that's great. And kind of the same thing was on Old People, as Andy Fetcher, who's also the director, wrote the script, and he sent it to me. And so there was already a script, but even that script changed a lot from what it was, because there was like a very strong supernatural component to the script. It's the first script of Old People, so it was more like there is like a force in the world that turns the old people, makes them to killers.
I have a question and about that later.
And there is a power the kid has. And that's like, there's one thing with the asthma spray in the movie that doesn't really pick up on anywhere else. But that's like a leftover from the old thing, because the kid has a breathing problem. And that's due to the kid's breath that can change the old people back in a way. So that was in an old version, but we got rid literally nearly to all of that and tried to slim it down, make it more the birds from Hitchcock. So you don't know why they're doing it. We obviously don't want this to be answered. It's not about why they're doing it. It's like, why they're doing it. And obviously I'm involved as a producer, you mostly talk to your writers and directors all the time about creative changes, especially if it comes to the budget, when the budget is not working out and your line producer tells you can't make the movie on the budget that we have, then you talk about doing script changes and try to keep the essence of the script and still make it cheaper.
Okay. Leopard Sky is an eclectic mix between action, thriller, horror, and Old People has a smidgen more gore to its horror. As a self-proclaimed geek, do you favor one particular genre of these over the others?
Yeah, it's funny. The question has been coming up a lot.
Sorry.
I guess it's great because I love that question because I have my favorite genre. And my favorite genre is fantasy. And I just love like fantastic angles to movies. And it's so funny because both movies, like I said, we actually got rid a little bit of the fantasy element. So I also think Blood Red Sky, to me, is an analytic kind of person, is a bare-bone thriller because, and here's the thing, a horror movie needs a supernatural component, which could be vampirism, but the vampirism in Blood Red Sky is based on a sickness.
Yeah.
So it is based on reality and how a virus could work. So to me, there is no supernatural component to that, apart from the sickness that it turns into a super strong creature. But to me, that makes it a super clear thriller. Old People is probably more closer to a horror movie because there is this thing that happens in the beginning to the old people that is not really, that you can't explain. So that's like a clear horror movie to me. And like I said, it's, to me, I love it. I love the fantasy elements when in the end there's a huge action scene, or when the transformation between the vampires happen, or in Old People when the old people attack the house. And over every time there is like a fantasy component where you think, okay, this is escapism, this takes me to a place that doesn't really exist. And both movies obviously can't be based on reality because those things are supernatural components, even if I say the vampirism is based on the sickness, but the sickness is made up. So I would totally say my favorite genre is fantasy, and at this point I did know so many horror movies that I rather would like to make an even more fantasy based movie that even goes more fairy tale-ish in a way.
Yes. And the next questions are, there's sort of the undercurrent of the budget in there. But I was wondering, how did you and the director/writer, decide on how much of the backstory you wanted to show or not? Because I find sometimes, yes, it can be helpful, but sometimes it does take away from the impact of the horror elements, like what you just mentioned about old people and, sort of the supernatural explanation. And also, how did you decide how graphic you wanted to go in regards to the horror elements? Because I would imagine that's also sort of a budget issue as well.
The good thing is both movies were made for Netflix, and Netflix was not shy on saying, okay, we just need to be as graphic as possible to reach the audience. There were some things like killing the dog in Blood Red Sky was a huge issue, and they didn't want us to show it as graphic as we had it. Same thing goes for killing Jeanne Gourzeau in the beginning of Old People when she gets her head smashed with the fire extinguisher. We had that scene. Actually, we produced the whole scene with the visual effects of her getting her whole face smashed in. And there is a scene of that, but Netflix said it's the beginning of the movie and they were afraid that people would turn away seeing like a young, beautiful, intelligent woman getting her face smashed in gory matter. So we toned that down. We toned down the killing the dog in Blood Red Sky. Still, there is like so much roof violence in both movies that they're both super gory. Even Blood Red Sky is super gory if you watch it. Netflix wanted it, and we wanted to make movies that like make you jump your feet when violence happens. And those are both movies about violence. So the other thing, it was less a budget reason than it was actually like Netflix telling us what to do.
Okay.
Or what not to do.
And
rephrase the question. There was another component to the question that I forgot.
The backstory.
The backstory.
Yeah.
And the backstory is really funny because, like I said, in Blood Red Sky, there was a version that didn't have the backstory. Netflix really wanted the backstory, so the movie got a little bit longer and got more character, and that there's more character than Nadia's character. So they wanted actually the backstories, the flashbacks in that. Turns out the flashbacks were the moments the audience turned away, even though we got a huge audience. So there was a component to that, but it's like really small numbers on the numbers that the Blood Red Sky make. But still, it like kind of made Netflix aware of that. So Netflix from now on always said, no flashbacks anymore. No flashbacks. People turn away from flashbacks. I just think that probably the speed that happens in Blood Red Sky is when the flashback comes in, the
yeah,
speed
and
that
then it
the
slows
speed
down.
changes,
Yeah.
and people were like, "Oh, what's that? I don't know. I don't care anymore." And then they probably went out of it, but I don't know. So I also think the question is, do we need the flashbacks or not? On a cinematic movie, I would always say yes, you need those kind of
Yeah.
flashbacks because they get you closer to the character. What I learned from having now done three movies for Netflix, that Netflix also is its own kind, follows its own kind of rules and is its own kind of media product. A cinematic movie works different as the audience can't turn away. On
Yeah.
Netflix, they can turn away. So the beginning has to be way stronger and way faster into the movie. And in the end, you can be slower and tell more story, which is very different from the three act structure that we learned
Yeah.
going into theater movies. And so that was a little bit learning that we have our old people. So old people starts very strong and really fast. And then the biggest problem was then we have 45 minutes that we spend on character development and then it hits the fan. And then the movie, the last 45 minutes are just an absolute thrill ride. But also after those 45 minutes of character development, people turned away and they didn't know that the hard part would come.
Okay.
So the completion numbers on that movie were all in the end, like on, it's a little bit like on Blood Red Sky. They were a little bit, you know, people went away after the long character development. So this time, if I would make another movie with Netflix, I would change it. I would try to be faster in the
Yeah.
beginning.
We already talked about Graham McTavish and Dominic Purcell in Blood Red Sky. These two are pretty well known internationally, but the rest, at least for the international audiences, are unknowns. And Old People doesn't have any international stars, quote unquote, so to speak.
No.
When do you, as a producer, again, together with the director slash writer, decide to go for names, and when do you decide it's not necessary?
The budget on Blood Red Sky is like triple the budget of Old People. From the beginning onwards, the concept of Blood Red Sky was we're doing a German movie
Yeah.
that has to also work international. That was like the strategic idea of Netflix at that point in time when they greenlit Blood Red Sky. So they even had the idea it would be cool. Like I said, this was an idea we always had, like having like cameos of stars in Blood Red
Yeah.
Sky. There was an idea for that. And Netflix loved that idea and said, okay, look, this has to work internationally. So what we are going to do is we're going to put up cool actors that in those roles. And they were literally written for just a star cameo. Like the bird character was always in there, but it actually got a little bit smaller and he dies earlier, actually, in the script, when we said, okay, this needs to be a star, Netflix pushed that idea really strongly that it could be cool, and they put up extra money so we could afford international actors like
Yeah.
Dominic and Graham. And we had a great international casting director, Des Hamilton, who also does all the Nicholas Winding Refn movies, and he was the casting director on Blood Red Sky for international. So the two characters were cast by him, and so it all came together very nicely on Blood Red Sky. And Dominic Purcell is very funny because Dominic Purcell was always the idea for the character of Bergen, how he should look like in our lookbook was Dominic Purcell. And then we reached out to a lot of other actors. And in the end, we reached out to Dominic and Dominic was like, I really want to do it. It's perfect. We said like, yeah, because he fits the role the best actually. And he really wanted to do it. And it was really cool. So on Old People, the strategic idea of what Netflix in Germany wants to do had already changed.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, Netflix Germany isn't as big in, okay, our movies have to work in Germany, but also internationally. Now they have a new strategic direction that is, our movies have to work in Germany. We don't
Okay.
care anymore how big they are internationally. They will be big internationally anyway because we are a huge platform. But if we're doing a German movie, the German movie has to work for the German audience. So that
I
had
see.
changed. And that's the reason why suddenly you don't need a Dominic Purcell in Old People. They were
Yeah.
very much interested in having bigger roles in the cameos from German actors. So
Okay.
when we got Melika, they were really happy because Melika is a huge star in Germany. And also like having a cameo from Jeanne in the beginning, who just had made Barbarians, they got really excited about. And so that was really cool. So, but like I said, the whole strategy of what Netflix wanted from us had changed.
Okay. Did filming with a minor in Blood Red Sky have any particular challenges? I mean, especially given that it dips into the horror genre, you
It's so
know?
funny. It's so funny. It's both movies and Carl, who plays Elias in Blood Red Sky, and Otto, who plays I forgot the name of the kid character in Old People. And there's both movies that feature young minors. And the fun fact is both kids are brothers in real life. So I had Emily Koch with me for 3 years, always around me, and they had 5 kids. And I know the mother and the father. We all became friends over that time period, as you can imagine. And they are both fantastic actors, fantastic kids, cool guys. Yeah. And you obviously, yes, if you do a horror movie, you have to follow a lot of protocols. Even just doing a movie with a minor, it doesn't have to be a horror movie. Yeah. You have to follow a lot of protocols.
The hours,
this is German,
you know,
the hours. And now you're doing a horror movie. And obviously, there's an institute in Germany that looks after minors working for film. And they talk to the families and the kids and see if they're stable enough to do that.
Okay.
And so we had them very early on in both projects. And especially on Blood Red Sky, the person who did that came in and we had the other kid cast. And she talked to the kid and the family and she came back to us and said, this family is not stable enough to do this. The kid is not stable enough. We have to recast him, which was really hard at the time. But then we got Carl. He is coming from an artistic family. His mother's a dancer, his father is an opera singer. All his brothers have been actors. He actually is a horror movie fan, even probably not supposed to watch horror movies, but he's a very big fan and he loves it. And obviously, making a movie is very different from watching a movie.
Yeah,
it's very fake. You never see blood.
You don't have the music. You don't have the sound effects. So,
yeah, it's more fun. He was able to go into makeup, talk to the makeup artist, see how the actors got them on. He got best friends with all of the actors. So we have like photos on my phone where there is like Carl sitting next to like 5 vampires and he's like joking around with them and he loved all of them. And funny, it's so funny because like I said, Carl was such a big fan of the genre in a way. He knew better than all the actors how they died, when they died, what they were doing, how the vampirism worked.
Yeah.
Obviously, we told him all that, helped him to guide him through the process and telling him, look, this is not reality, this is a movie. Fun fact, this Carl knew all that. He didn't need like showing. We always said we were going to make a big Halloween party around him. So he understands this is just makeup. Carl made a Halloween party from the beginning himself. So that was great. So it was a good idea to change the kids out. And we had, it was a golden thing. So next time I'm calling this office for kid security on movies in Germany. And I'm like, hey, I'm doing another horror movie. And another big kid role. This time the kid is even younger. And I cast Carl's brother, Otto, for this role. And they looked at me and said, look, Ben, you guys did a fantastic job on Blood Red Sky. We trust you already that you know what has to be done to give the kid a great time on set.
Yeah.
And obviously, me also being a young father now and Peter being a father at the time, we were both very, very concerned about the health of the kids, even like being sitting on an airplane and being outside with like a lot of killing old people. And there's always a teacher with them. There's always like a normally mother or father was with them.
Yeah.
And or I was with them. And I think that's really important that they have someone they can trust and they like and they know is a friend who's always with them on set. So it happened that I stepped in sometimes and said, look, are you not feeling well? Is everything okay? And sometimes we're a little bit exhausted and said, come on, let's make a 5 minute break for just Carl or Otto to walk around a little bit, take a new fresh air. And it's normally the kids that were like, no, I don't need it. No, you should totally go and do that. And you talk to the supervisor of the kid at the day and say, hey, should we take him out a while? And sometimes they say, yes, let's do it and see how he reacts. And then normally 30 seconds later, they're already back in and want to do it. And so that's great. But it was, I think it's something that's important to my heart to keep kids safe and to Peter and to Andy too. And so it was kind of easy for us to do it, even with the protocols that are very strict on how you have to work with kids, time wise, style wise, and everything. But it turned out really well, and it's a great experience. I must say, I'm a little bit proud how that worked out with both kids, and I'm still in contact with the family today, and we became friends, and I became kind of part of the family too. So it's great, and I love that about making those two movies, seeing those two great young actors being able to give this kind of performances in both movies.
Yeah. You shot in Blood Red Sky in Budapest or in Prague?
In Prague.
In Prague, in a decommissioned airplane, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the story is a little bit different.
Okay.
We bought an old movie airplane from Bavaria Studios.
Ah,
okay. It was built by our production designer many, many years ago. It wasn't used anymore, so it was decommissioned.
Yeah.
And we bought it and we refurbished it totally and brought it to Prague and built new stuff in. And so, yes. But it's a movie set. All of the parts are real plane parts. No.
Okay. And given that you had one location for most of the shoot, I assume that made it a lot easier to organize the shoot, or am I mistaken in that? You're shaking your head. You're like, no, not really.
No. Blood Red Sky has a lot of locations, even though it's all in an airplane, but there's like a galley, there's an officer galley, there's a B galley, there's a C galley, there's a first class, a second class, a business class, and a economy class. And
I didn't mean shooting locations. I meant like actual location.
Yeah, so it made it easier, but also like Blood Red Sky follows a very strict plan where the guns are, where the guys are. So we always had to keep that in mind. So we had like a huge plan of the airplane in our office and could actually say exactly where someone was and what they're doing and how logic is, where they are going. So it kind of was, yes, it was easier, and kind of no, it made it even harder, especially when you have 100 extras in the midst of a big pandemic sitting in a small airplane doing action scenes. You can imagine, we were the first project all over the world for Netflix to go back in after we had to stay down for 3 months. And that was hard, obviously, and we had like the strictest COVID protocols ever on the planet to do that with 100 extras in an airplane doing action scenes. So that kind of was even harder. And also when you are there for like 7 weeks in the same hall, in the same plane with 100 people, obviously there is kind of a component of being claustrophobic or having Lagerkoller is the German word for it, but I don't know what it, but like a lot of people that get like a little stressed out with each other over that period of time. And obviously we had that, yes. But we had to go out and it was always dark. The air was always bad because of COVID and the masks. And so it was rough.
Yeah. Because I was wondering the discussions you and Peter had, and obviously, you know, the DP as well, how to stage the action scenes and the fight sequences in a confined space like that. I mean, that, and also make it look fresh, because that's something that I found very, very interesting when I watched the movie, that you managed to still make the visuals look fresh and new, despite while you're watching, you know, it's the same plane. It probably seen this before, but it still looks different.
That was already a discussion that we had in the script, how to make it not boring, being this. And like I said, so the airplane consists of, I think, at least 16 locations that we had. Then obviously, Yoshi Heimrad is a fantastic DOP. And there's also a reason why sometimes the lights are turned on, sometimes lights are turned off, sometimes you just look in a different direction. Sometimes there is extra, sometimes there aren't extras. So every picture you see is something that you haven't seen before, even though you're in the same location. Yes, it, you had a very good eye on these things, yes.
Now we're talking old people, not to favor one over the other. And you mentioned that a little bit earlier in regards to the supernatural element, but I'm going back there because we talked a little bit about the gorier horror aspect of old people. I actually read in a viewer's critique after she watched it, she was afraid to visit her grandparents. So I think you guys did a good job. Was it a budget decision to decide against the sci-fi or fantasy supernatural element, or take us through that decision process?
No, like I said earlier, it was a decision that we made to make it more ground-based and to make it more, turn it more into the birds, like the Hitchcock idea of not having too many answers to things, and we like that, and we like to make it more distinct. And there also have been some people that say, I would have really want to know what happened, and so no, that's not what the movie is about. It's about what's happening and not why it's happening.
Okay, so
it was a very, very clear thing that Andy and I made the decision to say no, we're not going. We try to make this as real as possible with obviously the supernatural component of the old people going berserk. And we didn't want to turn it more into fantasy, because then it would have become a fantasy movie and not, and I think the message would have gotten lost faster.
And you mentioned Otto, I think the young actor earlier, but I was also wondering, was there sort of something that surprised you about shooting with quote unquote old people?
Yeah, absolutely. Like even like talking about shooting with minors, shooting with old people is obviously a whole different protocol to itself, because obviously these people are also like, they're old, they have, you know, you can't do stunts with them, they have to go home earlier, you can't have them sitting around on set all day when it's heat. And that was really, really tough. It was even tougher than shooting with two energetic young actors. It was harder because also people in their 60s or 70s today look super healthy. Like you need to, and obviously we wanted old people that look like really old, so, but today you look really old when you're like 90.
That's
So the
true.
whole casting process, and we shot the movie in Poland, that kind of helped a bit finding cool faces and cool actors that wanted to play these kind of roles. Obviously, the main lead evil character played by Gerhard Böss he's actually like 50, but this was all makeup that we put on him.
The Saving Grace in Old People is a song that brings Ike back
Yeah.
out of his, let's call it old age dementia. And it puts the emotional focus on family connections, which is quite old school. And I'm not saying that is
Yeah.
good or bad, but I was wondering if at any stage there was a different sort of saving moment. You mentioned the inhaler earlier. Was that something that you
No,
or
it was always supposed to be about family. Like even the first scripts were about family and like their problems with each other, even what it means for families. And people used to live together with their oldest elders and the youngest. And now they don't, and like what that means for families, and like for families splitting up, how families suffer under that. And yeah, it's a bit of conservative idea, I must say. I've never seen it that way in a way now that the movie is out, and I also read the critics and some people said it. But you can see it very conservative as you want. We never saw it that way. We always thought this is very fresh and open, and like having a family that is a patchwork family coming back together, having to save everything, and that you see that people, even with having split up, still loving each other and loving the kids. We've always thought it's cool. And also that like the grandfather then in the end coming in to save everyone. And like I said, this was always about family and like the Fast and Furious kind of sense. Yeah.
And for the last question, a lot of horror movies, you mentioned that earlier, can be a tool for sharing political and important
Yeah.
messages. And important ideas through metaphors, themes, and haunting imagery. We just talked about old people, obviously touching on the fact that there's a crisis of elder care in the Western world.
Yeah.
What about Blood Red Sky? Would you say that's also about family? Is it like a mother-son story
No,
or,
Blood Red Sky is I would say it's more about stereotypes. We stereotype women into being only mothers. We stereotype kids into only kids. We stereotype Arab guys on airplanes into terrorists. We stereotype white guys into good heroes. And the whole of Blood Red Sky is a play on stereotypes. You see that even like some of the characters in the passengers are very stereotypic, and then they change over the course of the movie. It's very funny because like I said, the two lead characters are not changing at all, but all the other characters, the character Alexander Scheer plays, Apeball, is a very stereotype psychopath, and is very made clear in the beginning. It's a play on that. Either you turn it around or you play along because you understand how these stereotypes work. You think perhaps in the beginning, a little bit too much over too much in the
But you
beginning.
guys really leaned into it.
Yeah, and it's like you have to understand he's a psychopath in the first couple of scenes, because when he turns into a vampire, then you understand, oh my God,
Now
if
we're in
this
deep
over the
shit.
top character, now we're into deep shit. And that's so important to make it that way so an audience understands it, especially when you have so many characters and so many arcs like in Blood Red Sky that you have to follow. And that's something I think also is important for Peter. And I tell you a story. We got a bad review, Süddeutsche Zeitung, which is one of the biggest news outlets in Germany
Big
if it comes to reviews.
surprise.
Yeah, here's the thing. I can tell you about it, and it makes me angry to this day. And I hope that the journalist listens in. But like I said, getting a bad review is always, it's okay. But the review stated, hey, Blood Red Sky is so bad because like they play with the stereotypes. And in the end, terrorists are also just Arab guys. The white guys are like the savior. And I'm like,
Like,
dude,
did you even watch the
you
film?
only watched the movie for the first hour. And it became, while reading that review, I realized this guy actually only watched the movie for the first hour. If he would have watched the whole movie, he would see that the Arab guy saves the world in the end. And like, obviously, we got a lot of emails from fans telling us, guys, how amazing. This is like the first time someone stands up and plays with that stereotype. And then in the end, even the Arabic guy is the savior. And I'm proud of that if it comes to Blood Red Sky story. Even like the whole Nadja arc, having a lead actress going from being just the mother to being the super antagonistic force and doing all the ups and downs in makeup. And like, you still, while she's a monster, you always see like there's a wrinkle in her eyes when she looks at her kid. Piri Baumeister, who is still to this point, did to me a fantastic, one of the best acting performances ever to me in a German movie, but I'm the producer, so I can say it. But like, she had such thick makeup on for five hours was applied, and you still see her emotional reaction to the kid in her eyes. And I think that's astounding, and it's great. And the story in Old People is much clearer. Mm-hmm. It's a very strong message saying, and that's also, here it comes to going back to the family question, especially in today's society of success that we live in. Focusing back on saying it's that your family tradition, not traditions, but family is important, and having to look for family and not getting lost in buying the next iPhone, but perhaps going to an elderly home and visiting your grandparents or your parents, because one day they will be old. And like you said, it's an old school idea, but it's still kind of important. And Blood Red Sky leans into that, looking at how society works right now. Mm-hmm. But it's an easy thing to understand and say, but it has never been said in a horror way where like the old people go back and kill everyone.
Yeah.
So that kind of hopefully makes it fresh, but people can have their opinions about it. I totally understand that. But like on Blood Red Sky, like I said, this is more like the play with stereotypes. And I got personally really, really angry about that one review
someone
didn't watch the movie. And then they said like, oh yeah, it's very stereotypic. And I'm like, well, if it is something, you can say a lot of things about Blood Red Sky. But if it's not, it's like because we play with all these stereotypes and make them very, very modern in a way.
No.
So I got angry. So perhaps the journalist listens in and can watch the rest of the movie. And then.
And we're almost done. But I have a few questions about you. You've been working as a producer for a while now, and you founded your own production company, Fright Zone. You have a special interest in genre films. We touched on that. How has the landscape in Germany changed over the last few years? If you would have to put it in a punchy 3 to 5 sentences.
The good thing is that when the moment the streamers stepped in, and now we're talking international conglomerates, they were looking at, okay, what's working internationally? And the genre works in the cinemas or for audiences in Germany. That's a no-brainer. Everyone knows that. Like the biggest, most successful movies in Germany are also genre movies.
Yeah.
So the horror movies make, like the Marvel movies make 7 million admissions too. It's not only the fucking goodest, but like all these kind of big mainstream genre movies also are genre movies. And sci-fi, fantasy works in Germany as well. So they looked at it and said, oh, it's funny, Germans are not doing these kind of movies. Why should, well, we should do these. And yes, it has changed a bit for the good and the worse, I must say.
Okay.
For the good, because now more stuff is happening. They are looking for younger filmmakers from all genders to look into these kind of genres and to give them the freedom to express themselves in these genres, which I obviously, as this has been like the big struggle in my life, which makes me very, very happy. And on the other side, after Blood Red Sky success, a lot of doors actually closed because a lot of the traditional, more conservative players in Germany didn't understand what happened. They don't know the genre. They have never done it in the last 30 years. This is not their classic standard crime, romantic comedy, drama show. So they got afraid and they said, they closed the door and said, no, we rather don't do this because we don't understand it at all. We rather stick to the traditional ways that we had. And that happened a lot of times to me in my career now.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that from other places too. So that's really interesting. For example, looking at RTL, which is now doing crime series and saying, no, we don't want to make it more experiments. We want to do a more classic crime. The good thing is, yes, they are aware of the situation and there are younger people at the traditional broadcast that all want change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. So even now I've just been to the Sirius camp in Cologne and saw the first trailers for like true horror series that are coming to ZDF Neo now, which have been done by young creative filmmakers, and they look just fantastic. And I'm really happy to be able to say, okay, there is change happening and there is a lot going on in Germany in the industry right now. It has been for the last 30 years very, very conservative, very, very not brave, but just like keeping on doing what worked for them and not being very good in doing experiments, but it is changing and it's changing for the better. Yes, it's slowly, not as much as I would love to, but it's changing and that's good.
Now, what is your favorite, maybe German, but not necessarily, horror film and why?
we can do
Supernatural as well, if you'd rather talk about that.
it's just, you know, I always think asking a filmmaker about what's your favorite movie, it's a little bit like asking someone what's your favorite religion, or you know, what is your true belief in something. So it's really, really hard always to answer, because there are so many great movies and idols and movies that I love that are from different genres and genre mixes and everything. And so it always depends on like the parameters to this question. To me, like I said, I'm more a fantasy action guy. So to me, I would always take Aliens over Alien.
All right.
I would take,
interesting,
you know, Predator over Conjuring.
But the latest Predator or the original one?
No, I'm talking the original. The original number one Predator.
Did you see the latest one?
I haven't seen the latest one.
Okay,
Prey,
then, yeah, because
it.
I saw that one, and actually, I don't know if I ever fully saw the original one. I'm sorry, but I did really like the take they had.
I tell you, they, because the first one is very funny, because it's an 80s movie that has like eight super muscled up guys, up by Arnold Schwarzenegger, like an army squad going into some bush. They are, you get from the first moment onward, these are like the eight hardest, coolest, toughest guys in the world. And it's like this, like just guys with muscles from the 80s. But there is one creature, and that's the Predator, that's stronger than any of them. And there's even one of them having like supernatural powers.
Yeah.
And even he gets killed by the monster. And I am now looking back at that movie, I think it's so cool, because it's actually deconstructing the big action character guy from the 80s. And putting something in front of it that is stronger. Obviously, Arnold wins in the end, but it's still an 80s movie. But I love the idea of like placing something in front of them that just kills eight of these guys. And like, it's again a play with stereotypes. So I love that about the original movie. Obviously, The Shining and everything Kubrick touched so many different genres, but it's like a perfect horror movie to me. I was surprised how good It is, the new It,
the
not
new
the
one?
Old
Okay.
It. Because it's also not a classic horror movie. This is actually more an adventure movie with kids in a summer that has like a couple of jump scares. But what I loved about it is in the end, when the movie's over, you have a good feeling to yourself. You feel like you had a fantastic summer adventure, like very much the spirit of what Stranger Things is doing. And you're not putting it out, and you're not afraid to go into the bathroom because you think there's something coming out of your closet or something. So I thought that I really loved that it gives you a very warm, spirited feeling in the end.
Okay.
And I always bring this up as an example of how a horror movie also can be.
Is there a special genre project that you're dying to get made?
Right now?
Probably several. I would imagine.
There's several. I'm working on something I can't talk about, but that's like a project that's so dear to my heart. And we are still trying to get like the right situation. It's very, very hard.
Ooh, okay.
We don't have the rights yet, but that's something when that goes, I hope that the money, the people that have the money understand how cool this is, because that's something that excites me so much. And it's also obviously genre, but not horror, but something I must say, it's really, really cool.
And finally, can you tell us what you're currently working on? Well, you told me earlier, but can you tell
our
listeners?
I'm doing X Factor season two. Season two, it's actually season six, as we relaunched Beyond Belief, a 90s show with Jonathan Frakes being the host last year.
Yes,
I became a
Jonathan
father last
Frakes.
Year, so I had to step back a little bit last year, but I got the offer to do the reboot of season five for us, season one, with Vita Mannenberg, together with Holger Frick, who's the showrunner, who sits over there, who made a pilot and showed RTL2 how that it can be done in Germany. And we're shooting it in English. We're shooting it again with Jonathan in LA. So we make it look like the original, and it was dubbed for the first couple of episodes, have already been screened on RTL Plus and RTL 2. And the first season was a big hit. So we're now here to shoot another season of that. And that's fun because it's like, we're shooting 40 small genre short movies in 40 days.
Nice.
And I think we're not sure if that has ever been done. But now, after this, now we are starting next week to shoot. But on the first season, we already did 40 shorts. And they're all like, when you know the X Factor, das Unfassbare, it's like small horror movies, like five of them in one episode. And it's really cool. And it's a lot of fun to make those.
And that was it. Thank you so much for sitting down with us today.
Thank you so much for this interview. It was cool.
It was a
Thank
pleasure.
You.
Deep Dive Genre is produced by German Films. the National Information and Advisory Center for the Promotion of German Films Worldwide. To find out more about our guests, check out the links in our show notes. To stay up to date with our episodes, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.